Join us as we gather around the hedge, where we dig into technology, business, and culture with the finest minds in computer networking.
Hey, Tom, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Russ?
I'm fine. Debian 12.
Yeah, on the desktop.
Is that an upgrade or a downgrade?
I don't know.
I need to know.
Jury's still out on that one.
Yeah, that mic is a USB mic, or is it a? It's a USB mic, right?
It's a USB. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Yeah.
USB audio seems to have issues on Debian. I think I just don't understand how to use PipeWire. Maybe, but anyway, I don't know.
Could be. I don't know. This is one of the reasons I went to an XLR. Because then the XLR external often has a line out, and you can record on a local recorder, and you don't have to worry about splitting your audio in the computer.
Sure.
So that's one way of solving it. Right now, I'm splitting the audio on the computer, but often I don't do that. I just have a local recorder, and I just record on the recorder, and it pops out in a micro SD card or whatever. So today we are joined by Jason. Jason, last name.
Justin Wilson.
Oh, Justin Wilson.
That's all right.
I'm so bad. I am so bad at this.
I tell people I'm lucky to remember where I live at night. You know,
I don't know.
If it wasn't for my driver's license.
How do you ever become a podcast host and never, ever remember people's names? How does that work? That's a terrible thing. Anyway, so that's Justin, right. You are, I don't know, you said you're in driving distance of Chanute, which brings up all these really bad memories for me. I shouldn't say that, but I was in tech school at Chanute for 9 months, and we always used to say, "You don't shoot them, you Chanute them."
Chanute them. I like
you
it.
You send them to Chanute.
Yep.
That was. Oh my goodness. But yeah, I don't know. Good memories and bad memories, and you know, my tech school was 9 months, so the first day on base, I get there, and you know, all the people in the dorm are saying, I'm going to be here for 4 weeks. That's so long. I'm like, I'm going to be here for 9 months.
Oh, yeah.
And they were all like, I feel so sorry for you.
back then, probably, you know, Chanute was a little more happening than it is, you know, today.
I don't know.
Today, it's Walmart and a couple other places, and that's pretty much it. You know, everybody goes to Champaign or...
Yeah. We all went to Champaign because there was nothing at Chanute.
Okay.
There was no active
active
runway. There was nothing, no airplanes. You're like, how do you go to an Air Force base with no active runways? That's such a strange idea. Okay, there it is. So today we are talking about longer than /24. So maybe give some background here. For the longest time, since time immemorial, almost ever since classless interdomain routing. And, you know, I still fuss at people. Why do you teach classful routing? Like, nobody even uses classful routing. Like, why is that still in classes? But anyway, /24 has been the longest prefix that you can route on the DFZ. I guess that's a matter of memory. I don't know who made that decision. But the community came together and decided on a /24. Do you know any more history than that, Jason? Because I don't. That's all I can admit.
You know, I've always heard it was memory, but I never really heard, you know, who got together and said, hey, you know, let's do a /24. You know, they could have easily done a /23. You know, back in that time, the IP addresses were given out like water.
Well, I think that part of it was the even byte boundary makes it easier to build hardware.
True,
so it
yes.
needed to be on an even byte boundary, whether it was 16 or 24, it needed to be or wanted to be on an even byte boundary. And I know that when we were doing Cisco Express forwarding, there was always the MTRI was three levels, each level carrying 8 bits. And, you know, so the last level isn't really a level. I guess you could do host routes. You could have 4 levels of an MTRI, but most of the time it was only 3 because everything ended in /23 or /24.
Makes sense.
Then, you know, we got to this point where we were actually doing a /16, so it was only 2 levels to speed it up and stuff like that. So I think a lot of it's hardware based, but okay. So that's where we are today. That's kind of where we are today is this idea that we should be doing /24s. Now, your argument is that we should be doing /25s or longer. Is it /24/5s or is it longer? And you call this controversial opinion.
Yeah, it's definitely a controversial opinion because you talk to some of these networks and they haven't updated gear in years and years. They're getting by piecemealing things. But one of the hats I wear is I do consulting for wireless internet providers. And these are a lot of startups, a lot of smaller ISPs, you know, just filling a need. And they don't necessarily need to, you know, give out lots of IP space to their customers. They're doing NATing. Some of them are doing IPv6. They're doing all the tricks. But more and more of them are wanting to participate in BGP, and they're wanting to, you know, join internet exchanges and things like that. And they're burning these non-existent /24s for two or three hosts. You know, maybe they have some web servers. They're out in the cloud or whatever most of the time. But they want to have portable IP space and be able to not be tied to one carrier or, you know, one ISP. And so that's kind of why I wrote some of the articles I wrote, because there's those companies out there. They want to participate in BGP, but they feel bad about doing it. You know, hey, I only use one or two IPs on my network, but I got to have this full-blown /24 to even participate. It's kind of like the guy who shows up at the car show. Hey, you got to have, 600,000 horsepower to go down the street.
I see, so
that's one big reason.
Okay, that's interesting, because that is not necessarily in the DFZ though, right?
No, a lot of these, the Cogents, the Hurricane Electrics, all these guys of the world, they've kind of settled on, hey, we're not going to accept anything, smaller than a /24. There's some technical reasons, maybe not so these days, but it's all filter rules. You can easily turn a /24 into a /25 with some keyboard work. I've heard the arguments, routers don't have enough memory these days, or that's why it started, and the global routing table is getting so big, and you can get routers that can handle 4 or 5 million routes, so why not?
I think one of the things that we have an issue with is that multi-homing and deaggregations, IP address space deaggregation, sort of lumped into the same basket. Yeah. And we think if someone's going to be participating in BGP, they probably are multi-homing. And anyway, that's one of the requirements to even get an ASN, is you have to be multi-homed.
Yep.
So, I think that's an interesting gluing together of different concepts. I see it from both sides, I feel like, because every time somebody puts, if theoretically we were able to, even deaggregating above the normal limit. So if you had a couple of /21 and you decided to break it down into its component networks, now your advertisement is consuming space, forwarding table space, on every other router that receives that advertisement. So yep. You impose on the community a burden of maintaining hardware forwarding. Now, everybody else can choose not to do that. There are various mechanisms for, you can control your own VIB consumption, but I think that's probably the root of a lot of the logic, is that you, by choosing to do this, you are imposing, some sort of burden on everyone else that participates in the global internet. That's probably the classic argument. But do you think, Justin, do you think people would, if they were allowed to, you think people would single home? And because in the single home scenario, you could ask your provider to aggregate you into a 24. And then in that situation, you could still participate in the BGP internet. But, you could kind of have it both ways. What are your thoughts?
I think that's a valid. I think there's networks out there that they're fine with, hey, give us provider IP space. They don't even need to participate in BGP. But I'm seeing more and more companies as content is getting closer to the customer. You know, it used to be you had to go to Chicago or New York or, you know, Dallas or wherever to get your major content. Well, now it's being pushed and pushed closer to the customer, and you're getting these regional and sometimes, you know, half regional locations. And it's beneficial for, good example is, I know a voice company, they have a couple soft switches in various markets through NATing and through carrier grade NAT. They don't need public IPs, but they have to be able to say, hey, I want to advertise in this market via BGP, and I want to advertise in this market via BGP. That way they are multi-homed in each market for redundancy, but they're also geographically. So one of the things they run into is, hey, you know, I don't need the IPs, but I need the redundancy. They've gone from, hey, I can be single homed to the point that, hey, my service to my customers is now so critical to them. I can't be single homed with a single provider. If they go down, you know, my business is hurting.
Right. So let's talk about some of these individual things, because I think, you know, we're kind of scooting around a little bit. Let's talk about, okay, so what we're saying here is, first of all, we're not just talking about a WISP who pulls in /25 from customers and then can advertise /24s, because they need to advertise the /25s upstream to their transits in order to get the dual homing that they need. So we can leave aside the idea that today, leave aside today the idea today that I am going to go to somebody like, I don't know, AT&T, Verizon, take your pick, whatever it is, and I'm going to say, can I have 2/25s? And you'll just advertise the containing /24, and nobody on the DFC knows the difference. In this case, the DFC knows the difference because it's there. Okay. So I think that's always the first argument I hear is, well, you can do /25s. Just don't advertise them to the DFC.
Yeah.
But that's not what you're talking about here. It's actually more than that. Okay, so then the second thing is routing table size is always a big issue. But let's be honest, I'm not sure I buy that argument any longer.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I do either.
Because here's my counter to that, my main counter to that is, we're talking about V6.
Yep.
What is the maximum number of V4 routes you can have in the table at a 24? 2^24.
Yep.
Right? What is the maximum number of routes you can have in the V6 table? What are we currently allocating?
Yeah, we're allocating some pretty big amounts to
40s. Basically 40s, right, is what you get right now. How many routes can you have in the table at a /40? So there is several orders of a magnitude more V6 potential routes than there will ever be V4 routes, even if we gave people /32s.
Mm-hmm.
The most we could do in V4 is a /32. A 32 is still shorter than a 40. So the routing table argument doesn't really, you know, I get it from a forwarding table size and stuff like that, but I really struggle with whether or not that's a valid. What do you think, Tom? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree that, like, I think on most platforms you can partition up that space how you want to, and you can say this much is for V4, this much is for V6, and you can sort of ignore that V6 address space is way bigger than what you've allocated. And I think V6 probably does get ignored as a convenient way to talk about this. I think, you know, that's because people, you know, yeah. Anyway, so. But I don't know. I think there is, I think there are, and there are other things too. And I'm not trying to take the side of those. I'm just kind of going back to my days operating these networks. And, you know, another function that it has, and whether it's good or bad, I don't know, but another function that this requirement has is it keeps out the people who don't have the resources or reasons or whatever to have these bigger blocks of addresses. You can argue whether that's good or bad, but it definitely is a fencing function. Like if you only need one IP address, you are not going to participate in the global internet actively. You're just not. And so the question is, well, is that the right thing for the community or not? Is that the right thing for the DFC or not? I don't know.
Yeah. And I think, go ahead. To your point, Tom, I think it has been historically kept some of the folks out who might be detrimental to the internet. You know, you don't want, and not to, you know, put anybody down, but you don't want just somebody getting on the internet and they don't know anything about filtering, or they don't know anything about how to actually participate in a community of network, you know, networks of networks. And so, yeah, you know, but nowadays you have the microticks, you have, you know, some of these commodity hardware that anybody can get and throw up a BGP session. So, you know, it is kind of a double-edged sword, I think.
Yeah. We used to have this joke when I was in TAC, whenever we got a customer who obviously didn't have any idea what to do with themselves. As far as they would call us with very basic questions, we always used to say, maybe we should ship routers in Chinese puzzle boxes. You can't get the router out of the box and turn it on unless you can solve the puzzle. You know, like, so, you know, there's a little bit of that. Now, there is a downside to that, right? Which is that you are blocking new startups from getting started in some cases. I don't know. Is that bad or is that good? I don't think it's a huge, I don't personally think going from a /24 to a /25 in memory and stuff is actually that huge of a leap to me. It doesn't feel like it to me, or even a /26. Like, it's just not that. It's no more of a leap than V6 is, again.
Yeah.
Like, I don't see it that way. And so I guess the next argument you'll always hear is, well, but what about hardware? Can you switch on a /25 in hardware or /26? And this goes back to part of the reason people chose /24. I don't know. I don't know why that's a thing anymore. That doesn't seem like a thing to me.
And one of the things I've been asking on some of the groups and things is TCAM memory and routers. Is that still even a big thing? You know, a lot of the people I deal with, they buy white box switching or they buy microticks. They don't have dedicated, you know, TCAM memory for holding routes. So that's, you know, one of my, maybe you guys have heard about that. Is TCAM even a thing anymore?
Yeah, there's definitely forwarding limits. There are definitely hardware limits to forwarding. And how big the table can be. But there's also some technique, they're not really new, but some techniques that are useful for expanding forwarding memory dynamically. There's external TCAMs, there's filtering things you can do. There's selective route download and stuff like that, the things you can do with filtering. So there's definitely some techniques, hardware and software, to deal with expanding table size for sure.
Yeah, I wonder actually why we don't do fib compression sometimes. Compression between the rib and the fib sometimes. That's something I don't always understand. Like, why that was never a thing that we ever did. We've done experiments on it many times, and it doesn't seem to be something that we think about. But that would relieve some of the pressure.
So, Justin, what do you think, what would be the good? So let's say that this happened. The whole community agreed to allow 25s or 26s in. What would be the effect from your point of view? What would be the positive change we would see?
I think one of the things is it would make V4 space a little more attainable by folks. And again, that's a double-edged sword too, because we do want people migrating to V6, but we're stuck with V4. So you become a little burdened to say, hey, I'm only going to be V6. I got to do 6-4 NAT translation. So I got to buy a box, and it becomes kind of, you know, pricey for some of these smaller companies to do it. So if we start issuing /25s from the registries, or allow the ability to say, hey, I have a /24. I want to officially break it to somebody else. You allow more people to participate in BTP, but not necessarily just that. You allow more companies to be multi-homed. So now you're not stuck with just one provider. You know, hey, I need IPs, and maybe I can't get a /24. I think the current, like for Aaron, their current registry list is like 3 years, the last I heard, to possibly get a V4 address. So if you want to not be at the mercy of the local telephone company or whomever you can get some IP from, you know, being able to say, okay, I can get my hands on a 25. Now I can buy, you know, transit bandwidth from somebody else. And so that makes their company a little bit more resilient, because we've all seen multi-hour outages, multi-day outages with fiber cuts and things like that. That can put somebody out of business. But the argument also is, well, you know, they should come up with NAT techniques and things to come around that. Well, if you're talking real-time video or voice, that becomes an issue. So not necessarily with, hey, we want them to participate in BGP. We want their network to be resilient. And the most common way of doing that is BGP.
Yeah, and I was thinking NAT was an option, but then I thought, but if you're actually doing two different providers, then that doesn't necessarily help you, because, you know, you're talking about PI space here. We're not talking about PA space. We're talking about PI space. So NAT's not carrier grade. NAT's not really going to solve this.
If you're trying to offer a service, it's not going to solve it. It depends on what the service you're trying to provide. If you're trying to provide, you know, internet connectivity for clients, it doesn't matter. You could have two NAT boxes, one on each provider, ECMP the default before behind them, and you're done. But if you're trying to offer services, then that's different. Although, I mean, it could also be argued that if you want resilient applications, then your applications ought to be there. There are architectures where you're not depending on the network necessarily to provide every bit of the redundancy and resiliency. You can say, well, your application ought to be smart enough to be able to send services to, you know, PA space A or PA space B, and you've got your two providers, and your service doesn't need, should, you know, your service could exist independent of the network infrastructure, you know, on top of it. There are other ways to do it. It would be another way to approach it. I don't know that it's like there's one is good or one is bad, but
yeah. Yeah, sure. That makes perfect sense. Yeah. So, yeah. So going back to the good things, it would allow more people. In fact, it might offset even the increased requirement on the router hardware side with a, you can get a /24, a /25, because a /25 is probably, come on, how much is a /24 versus a /25 going to cost?
Yeah.
And it may just offset the entire cost of the equipment in one stroke. So that seems like something that is, I don't know.
Lower cost does not necessarily mean people will be unsophisticated, but I guess I'm just going to take on the role of the anti-voice here. but, you know, the internet is fragile enough, the DFC is fragile enough already, right? So if somebody is it more likely that a company with a large IP space and the resources to do that, is it more likely that they would do something dumb, become a transit AS or whatever, you know, unintentionally? And, you know, is it more likely that they will do it or that these smaller operators will do it? And it's probably more likely that the smaller operator is going to do something to harm the DFC, I think is a pretty fair statement. That's nothing to say against my colleagues on the smaller operators. I think all of you are awesome, but you know, if someone's just throwing together a router real quick and want to get on the internet and move on to some other things, and maybe they don't have experience with this, it could make things more fragile, probably.
Yeah, it definitely could. And at the same time, you can make the argument that I've seen from some of the bigger outages have been because people are, the bigger operators are doing automation. And now the sure, automation, fair. You know, mishandled an IP or something like that. So yeah. you have that to begin with. And my hope is the smaller operators are kind of carried by the larger guys. Hey, we're doing some, you know, DDoS mitigation for you, and we're doing black holes for you, and we're doing some things that protect you a little if you run into issues. So I'm hoping that the providers would kind of step up and say, okay, you know, we're accepting these 25s. Now we have these new networks. We need to, you know, we need to help them out a little.
Is that really any different than slash 24s 10 years ago though?
No, not really. No.
That seemed like it.
The smaller guys were getting slash 24s years ago, so they could start to grow in their networks.
Yeah.
The price of IP address space might make all of this moot, and if it's not already moot in a couple of years, because what's the difference? Like if it's $1 million for a 24 and it's $500,000 for a 25,
yep.
Then what's the, I mean, it's at some scale, it doesn't actually matter. Like if you're going to spend that much money on IP addresses, or you're going to spend $500K on IP addresses, then I don't know.
$500K versus $1 million might put one company in or out of business, especially sure. in the WISP space, right?
And I've had, you know, conversations with like John, you know, from Aaron and things, and one of the unknowns I have is, okay, if you allow this, how much more supply are you going to get into the, you know, into the pipeline? Are you going to have people who say, hey, I have a slash 24, I will sell that, or I will break it apart because I'm a good citizen? How much of that would really happen? So it may not even, you know, be worth it. You may have 10 companies that say, oh yeah, you know, here's, I'm giving up my bottom half of my 25, and it may not even, you know, may not even be a thing.
That's an interesting, I mean, it always comes around to economics for this stuff. Yeah. But yeah, if you could dump a bunch of supply of IP addresses on the market as a result of this, and you know, maybe you could bring down prices for a little while.
Yeah,
it's kind of interesting.
And there again, is this a good thing from the perspective of IPv6? Because everybody wants V6 to go.
Yes.
By continuing to extend V4, are we doing a bad thing? I don't know. It almost feels like you can't. It almost feels like, okay, we're not going to get V6 to go faster than it's already going, no matter how much pain people get, because they've already deployed carrier-grade NATs. They've already we're already at 2 and 3 layers of NAT in every place we go. You know, I don't know that you're going to do much more to encourage people to get off of V4. By restricting the address space. It doesn't seem like it to me.
Yeah, it's here. It's not going away. Yeah. Well, there's lots of advantages to V6. And I see kind of the same camp saying, well, I don't want to go to V6. I don't have enough router memory. Kind of like what we were talking about earlier, those the anti-V6 people kind of have fallen into the, at least the ones I've talked to, the, oh, we should only accept 24s or, you know, or bigger. Those two people kind of line. So I think if you're against V6, you're probably going to be against, hey, I, you know, let's start accepting 25s.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't know if I buy the memory and the processing arguments very much. I mean, I guess I do. If you know, if you've gone out and bought a Tomahawk chipset white box for your edge router, okay, maybe. But like, if that's what you have as your edge router, do you really care if you have to back into main memory because you're out of TCAM? I don't.
Right.
Like, are you really at the performance level where it matters that much?
Yeah.
Whether you're routing out of TCAM, doing lookups in TCAM versus doing lookups in standard DRAM. I don't know. We did process switching for years and years and years, and it honestly scaled perfectly fine for many years until we got to, you know, certain network speeds and route table change sizes and stuff like that. And honestly, our first attempt at caching didn't turn out too well either. So that's another entire story. You know, fast cache. I was in TAC when fast cache failed. And that was ugly. Yes. That was an ugly ugly little thing to live through. that was pretty bad. So, yeah. I mean, I don't know that I buy all that. And then I guess another way that you could approach it that might be interesting would be to say you can only do slash 25s if they're geographically aligned so that some upstream someplace can aggregate them.
Yeah.
Now, I know we've tried this before and it's never worked, but how realistic does that sound? I mean, could you say that you don't have to be geographically aggregatable for slash 24s, but you have to be for slash 25s? Would that put a huge damper on the market? Would that be practical? Is that something that, like, would work, or is that, like, crazy?
I think it's an interesting concept, especially because the people probably needing the 25s are not going to be that geographic diverse. You know, they're a small company. Maybe they have, you know, east-west type of setup, so they can deal with it. I think that would be an interesting concept to pursue. You'd have to get buy-in from a registry that would manage that type of stuff. But yeah. I think that would be, and you'd have to get buy-in from the carriers. Mm-hmm. But I think it would be a decent thing to explore for sure.
Yeah. I do think it would be hard to manage. And yeah. Usually what happens in the global internet is the tragedy of the commons. Like what Tom first started talking about is when you advertise a slash 24 for traffic engineering purposes, you don't hurt you. You hurt the internet.
Yeah.
And this is something that's really hard. This is one of my arguments about PGP security. Is we all talk about, well, you know, it's not so hard to process my routes, whatever. Yeah, but just think about the global scale, how much more information you're dumping into BGP and into the BGP ecosystem, or with DNSSEC, how much more you're dumping into the DNS ecosystem. And we always have this opinion on the internet that it really doesn't matter what I advertise because everybody else can just absorb it. It's just one more route. But if you have a million people saying it's one more route, yeah, it kind of becomes mm-hmm. important. So I get that argument. And I think the problem with the geographic thing would be when we go to tragedy of the commons, the geographic aggregation is not, it's going to fall apart because everybody's just going to say, yeah, well, you know, you have this slash 25 that you bought and now this big company comes in and buys you.
Exactly.
And they don't want to stop using the slash 25, but heck, they could use it over here on this other side of the world instead of where it is now. And how are you going to say no to them? Right. It's got to have some pretty serious controls at the provider level to say, no, that is Southwest region, United States route. I am not accepting it from the Northeastern region of the United States. I'm not accepting it out of Hong Kong. You know, mm-hmm. I know that that particular prefix belongs in this region. And so you'd have to have a lot of control around that. I don't know how effective we could be at as a community at doing that. But yeah, I don't know.
Good friend of mine says sometimes it's like herding cats. You know, if you look at the RPKI statistics, how many people have, done RPKI on their IP space, and that's a fairly easy thing to do. So now you're dumping in, IP management on top of it. I see that where it could go south real quick.
Yeah. Well, you can put the geographic bits in the RPKI, but okay, let's back up again. RPKI, when we first started talking about RPKI, one of the criticisms was the existing IRRs, I guess it is, RIRs, not the regionals or whatever, IRRs, not the regionals, the volunteer ones, aren't very clean anyway. They don't contain valid information.
Yes.
So if no one keeps that information up, why should they bother with the RPKI information? So it's going to look great for 5 years, and then people are going to start selling routes, selling prefixes mm-hmm. all over the place, and nobody's going to keep up with the RPKI stuff. So you're just going to end up with a mess.
Yes.
And that's always the problem. It's a tragedy of the commons problem. It doesn't hurt me to not change my RPKI information. I don't really care. Mm-hmm. Unless I just can't advertise for some reason, right?
Well, that's kind of the point of our PKI, though, is to make it so that eventually it does hurt you, not to create a ROA for your routes. And, you know, but a lot of people have to participate in it for that to be the case.
Right. And so I was going to say, if 50% of the RPKI is invalid because of changes, then nobody's going to check it, right? It's got to be consistent among everybody to make it work all the time. Otherwise, it just falls apart as an information source.
Anytime I get new IP space for a client from Aaron, it's been a little while, but there for a while I was getting, you know, a /24 for this person or that person. And every time I'd have to go in and clean up the registry stuff, and I'd have to email this registry or that registry and say, hey, can you verify that, hey, this company now has the IP space, go ahead and purge it from your registry. And I had to do that every time with every IP space, even after Aaron went through and did all their checks with it.
Yeah. And to make matters worse, IP addresses have reputations.
Yes.
Right? And so there's certain IP addresses that are essentially unusable on the internet because they've been used for botnets and spam and everything else so much that, and this is an interesting question. Maybe the /25 is a way to get around some of that. Maybe saying, all right, we've retaken the /24. So I understand that you won't take the /24, but maybe the subset can be seen as a new allocation and therefore a fresh start for the reputation of that address space. And it could allow us to gain more address space in that way as well. I don't know.
Very true.
So, yeah, all very interesting. I don't know. I don't have a lot more to add to this, Tom. Anything?
No, I think we've pretty well covered it. Anything else, Justin, you're thinking about?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote that thinking, hey, it's going to help a subset of people. But I think it still is a double-edged sword, like we've kind of talked about. It's I don't know how valid of a proposal it would be for, you know, to do this. It would be nice to really vet it out. I'm hoping some people that are smarter than I am will kind of take this and run with it and say, hey, we've exhausted this to the point that, hey, it's viable or it's not viable.
Yeah.
Hopefully somebody like last time we talked about automation and got this explosion of interest.
Yeah. Exactly.
You were wrong because of.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll get some more of those. That'd be great.
I don't mind people come on up to me and say, you're wrong. And they tell me why, because I'm like, oh, okay, I didn't see that angle of it.
Yeah. Well, from a practical perspective, I think this is something that would have to come out of the registries first.
Yes.
I mean, it could be approached in the IETF, but you're likely to just get a lot of argument. There's going to be a lot of heat and very little light.
Yes.
Unfortunately. Because, you know, the IETF is largely driven by facts on the ground. And if there's no facts on the ground, everybody has an opinion like everybody has a nose, and they're just going to circle around with their opinions and noses, and you're not actually going to do anything. Everybody's going to say, hypothetically this, that's awesome. But until some registry dips their toe in the water.
Yes.
And says, all right, for my region, I will allow geographical /25. So let's try it for a couple of years. Let's see where this goes. I don't think there's going to be much in the way of progress other than coming out of a registry of one type or another.
So I would agree there, because they'd have to push it down. Yes. Because like we talked about at the beginning, where did the whole /24 come up with? There's no white paper on it. There's no number from the IEEE. It just, here it is.
I think it is codified in an IETF spec someplace.
In a BCP, sure. Probably.
Yeah, in BCP.
But that wasn't driven by discussion in the IETF community. That was driven because the operators came to the IETF and said, we need this out of the IETF. That's my point. It's got to be driven from the operational side. This is not going to be driven from the standard side. The standard side needs to be driven by operators to solve this if it's ever going to be done. And there probably needs to be some experimentation, right?
Yeah.
What happens if – what's the oldest router you can run with /25s and still get line rate performance out of it? I actually don't know the answer to that question. It would be very, very dependent on each line of routers and ASICs and everything like that. But I don't know. Would an AGS Plus still be able to do /25s and get line rate? I don't know. I have no idea. Right.
Well, somewhere in the world, there's probably a router that will fall over and lose its mind when it gets a 25. It's guaranteed to happen.
Yes.
There were routers that fell over when they got their first /31.
Yes.
That happened. So, yeah, I mean, it does happen. And so, but is that incident going to be, we don't know how common that would be and whether, what the ROI is, what the trade-offs are. In, like, is that 1% of the routers globally? Is that 0.5%? Is that 20%? We have no clue what that number is. So I think it's
going to be. And the heavy-handed, you know, the heavy-handed approach would be, well, you need to upgrade. Well, that's not always practical.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, sure it is. Just get a Dell Precision Workshop, run FRR on it. Seriously, 10 million packets a second. You're good to go.
Yeah. True. Well, and you have all these solutions out there, and some of it, I think, it's just laziness.
Yeah. And honestly, in many cases, if you're on the receiving end of a /25 and you're a small dual connected ISP or WISP, do you really care about the /25s? Does it really optimize your outbound routing that much to have the /25s in your table? You could literally just filter them out in most cases.
Yes.
And you probably wouldn't know the difference. You would either follow a shorter prefix or you would follow a default, and you would never know the difference from an optimal routing table, from an optimal pathing perspective. That's a guess. It may not be true, but I'm just thinking, like, when I think about network designs and I think about people who are dual-homed and triple and quad-homed, if they're that small, then most of the time, they care about the exit point of their traffic. But for that percentage of their traffic, if it's 10%, 15% of their traffic, it probably doesn't really matter, honestly, for that small slice of traffic.
And it goes back to the other hat I wear is we run an internet exchange. We run several exchanges. And so there's not much way around, hey, I want to peer on an exchange because I have a customer on there that it would benefit us to, you know, to peer with. And they can't get around the NAT on the exchange. They can't get around this and that. So a little of my, you know, all of this for me is a little selfish too. You know, I want people to peer on exchanges. They can't peer on exchanges without ASNs and IP space. They can use the exchange to cross connect, but it's not the same thing.
Yeah.
So when you start talking about, you know, exit points, okay, how beneficial is it for me as a, say, a voice provider to be able to cut down my SIP trunks by 15 milliseconds by peering on an exchange? You know, that might even warrant, hey, I'm just going to buy the IP space.
Yeah.
But what a /25 maybe on just an internet exchange. You know, I've told all of our members of internet exchanges, hey, I'm open, if you are, to telling our people that you can, you know, exchange smaller routes. You know, if you want to experiment with exchanging a /25, but that's not really a good thing for me to start telling them because it's not a top-down solution. Like you said earlier, it has to come from a registry, I think.
Well, some registry has to be willing to experiment in their geographic domain and see how it works, and see how many routers fall over. That's what's going to have to happen.
Yep.
Yeah. So cool. All right. Okay. So that was awesome. So Tom, I think I'll start with you. Where can people find you if they want to?
On LinkedIn.
And that's it.
And that's it.
He used to have a blog. He used to be on Twitter. He used to have all this. And he just keeps like withdrawing. He's like the turtle withdrawing into his shell. So that's the mess of Tom over time.
It's a comfy shell.
There you go. I like it.
And Justin, where can people follow you or get in touch with you if they want to?
J2SW.com. That's the jumping point for everything. Okay. Everything me.
And you, I guess you blog sometimes on what Circle ID or AP Nick or whatever.
Yep. Yeah. By some of my blog posts have been picked up from some of those folks. So I'm pretty happy about that. They've been good to me.
All right. Awesome. And as always, I'm Russ White. You can find me here on The Hedge or at rule11.tech on LinkedIn. Sometimes on X, whenever I feel like it. X used to be Twitter or whatever. I don't know what to say about all that anymore. We know that your time is valuable in the modern world, that we live in an attention economy, and we're just happy you decided to spend the last 30, 40 minutes with us talking about /24s and talking about networking geeky stuff. So again, thanks for listening, and we will catch you next time.